Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is David Bell, who's out with a brand new thriller, Somebody's Daughter. It's available now from the good folks at Berkeley, part of the Penguin Random House family of publishers. In this book, we spend a night with the Frazier family. Michael and Angela Frazier are home in their mini mansion one evening when a knock on the door turns their world upside down. It's Michael's ex-wife, Erica, who stopped by seeking her ex-husband's help in her most desperate hour. Her 10-year-old daughter, Felicity, has been kidnapped, and there's just one more thing. Erica tells Michael that Felicity is his daughter, a daughter he never knew about until that moment. So the story unfolds over the next 12 hours when family secrets are revealed, and everyone is in jeopardy at one point or another. David, a missing child is a nightmare in and of itself for any parent. Throw in the element of Michael not knowing about this little girl and not even knowing whether his ex-wife is telling him the truth, and the emotions are elevated even higher. What kind of a person is Michael Frazier to agree to undertake this search with tons of unanswered questions?
Michael is a guy who pretty much has everything going in his life. He has a good job. He has a happy marriage. He has a decent amount of money. The only problem really in his life is that he and his current wife, Angela, have not been able to conceive a child, and he has this starter marriage from his past with Erica that he really doesn't like to talk about anymore and really doesn't even think about that much anymore until Erica shows up on his doorstep and says, hey, not only am I here, but this is your child who's missing. And so Michael has this intense desire to be a father. Now he finds out he might have been a father for 10 years and not known about it. So he really kind of feels like he has no choice but to go out into the night and to try to find this missing child who might be his daughter.
Well, this book, it's 400 pages or so. It has chapters that run about 4 pages each, and they all end with some sort of cliffhanger. As a reader, this style not only was exciting, but it kept me from getting much sleep a couple of nights ago. And so there's never a good stopping point to put the book down, so I rarely did. But as a writer, how does that technique affect your ability to stop and restart the writing?
Well, I mean, as a writer, I get caught up in the story, too, and I just want to keep going. But I think, for me anyway, you know, writing a longer novel is that you've got to pace yourself. I just try to do so much a day. I find myself in the same position where I want to keep going because I'm excited about the story and caught up in what's going on. I have to try to remind myself just, you know, calm down. You can't write like, you know, 200 pages in a day. Just go slow and the story will get done.
Is there a lot of shrinking the story down? Because it seemed like as you wrote it, you cut out anything that could possibly be boring because literally everything was exciting.
Well, I go back. There's probably, you know, when I had finished the book and I went back to look over it again, you know, there were probably, I don't know, 5,000 words or something like that that I cut out of the book, different chapters that just didn't really advance the plot or tell us anything that we didn't already know. So it's definitely my goal to strip it down to the absolute essentials. Elmore Leonard, who's the legendary mystery writer, his advice was cut out all the stuff that readers would skip anyway. You know, like long descriptions of the weather and stuff like that. So I hope that I followed Elmore's advice and have the book boiled down to the essentials that the reader needs.
Well, I certainly didn't think there were any wasted words, but, you know, you mentioned Elmore, yourself, you're a writer. I think there's a lot of people that have misconceptions about writers. They think they're either really rich, like Stephen King, or really poor, like Charles Dickens. You're now an accomplished writer, so where does the truth lie about writers between those two extremes?
I think most writers who are publishing with pretty good publishers and are having careers are just like any other professionals. I used to have this romantic notion when I was a kid that all writers were like Ernest Hemingway, and they were in Paris and they were in Key West and they were, you know, going off to the Spanish Civil War and doing all this wild stuff. The truth is, once I got older and I met writers who were working writers, most of them are regular people who have families, and they're, you know, they're driving their kids to soccer practice in the Toyota Camry, and they're cutting the grass, and they're doing things like that. It's a profession. It's not always romantic and inspiring. Sometimes it is just, hey, you got a deadline and someone is offering you money if you meet the deadline. And you have to do the work. You have to be a pro and get the work done. So I think that is probably the reality for most professional writers.
With a thriller like this, it's such an intense plot, and I've got to think, I know I just couldn't wait to get done with the book because I wanted to find out how it ended. And as a writer, you write this book, it takes you however long it takes you, and then you have to wait a while to get it edited, published, and stuff. What's that waiting period like as an author to know that you have this fantastic story, but you've got to wait several months just to get the thing on shelves?
Yeah, that can be frustrating and that can be nerve-wracking, but I'm writing and publishing a book every year. So when one book is finished, I mean, literally, it doesn't take but days after that book being finished to have to start thinking of the next thing that's going to come along. So there really isn't a lot of downtime where I have the opportunity to just sit back and say, oh, yeah, I'm like tapping my fingers on the desk saying, well, what happens now? There's always the next thing to go on to. It's either the idea for the next book or writing the next book or promoting this book or copy editing the next book or whatever. So it's fast-paced. It does keep moving. The most difficult time is just those few days right before the book comes out when the anticipation is building and getting really crazy. That's really the most anxiety-ridden time, I think, for most writers.
Is it difficult once you've started a new book to go back with editing changes on a previous book? I mean, you have to reacquaint yourself with the characters?
Yeah, it is. I mean, because the way I operate, and I don't know if all writers do this, but I tend to be linear in my thinking and in my working, and so I don't like to be interrupted. I don't like to have to put one thing aside to go back to something else. But it's inevitable that it happens. I mean, for instance, the other thing that happens is, so somebody's daughter comes out and I have to go out and talk about somebody's daughter. Since from the time I finish somebody's daughter until somebody's daughter comes out, I've written another book. So I have to kind of go back into the mindset of somebody's daughter. Oh, right, what happened in that book? What exactly, you know, because I'm totally immersed in the next book. So there's a lot of gear changing in that way.
You teach creative writing at Western Kentucky University, and when you write a book like this, what's the pressure like when students read your work, knowing that they're probably thinking, hey, I want to see if Dr. Bell can really practice what he preaches?
You know, I really don't know how many students end up reading my books. I know some of them do. A lot of them don't. A lot of them probably don't even know that I'm a writer. But the other thing is, if a student compliments my book during the semester, it doesn't really count because I think they're just trying to get an A from me. They have to compliment my book after the semester is over. But once that happens, yeah, sure. And I guess the thing that it comes down to is I like to think that having published enough books, I have some credibility when I go into the classroom, that if I offer a student advice or insights about writing, they can at least say, okay, well, this is someone who has done it professionally, who might know what he's talking about because he has worked in that field in that way. So I hope it at least gives me some credibility whether they like the book or not.
As you've taught writing, have you seen that students who come to you or come to your classes, maybe that are at MFA level, they either have it or they don't by that point? Or could you literally teach anybody to be a writer?
I think there are very few people who have no talent whatsoever. And usually that's people who maybe have never learned grammar and just haven't tried to learn anything. I think most people can improve as a writer, whether it's working with a teacher, a published writer, or just being in a writing group. So I would say almost no one would I just write off and say, you can't ever write. Especially because when people are young, I mean, I would hate to be evaluated based upon what I was like when I was 20 or 22 years old, right? I mean, I was an idiot. I didn't know anything. So if someone works for 10 years beyond that point, of course, they can improve as a writer, and you have no idea who's going to succeed and who is not going to succeed.
All right. Well, the book is Somebody's Daughter by David Bell. It's available now wherever your books are sold from the good folks at Berkeley. I can't say enough good things about this book. I absolutely adored it, and I've recommended it to so many people already. David Bell, thanks for putting out a great book for us to enjoy, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
She's somebody's daughter, somebody's child.